I'm interested in the pioneer spirit that exists in so many families. And if you are a couple and you're trying to blaze a new trail, then you're a patriarch family. And what I mean by that is you are like your family's version of Abraham and Sarah, and you are going to a new land that you've never seen before, and you are trying to set up something new, and you're trying to figure it out, and you're walking by faith, and it takes some courage, and you're trying to reinvent something.
Hi, I'm Steve. For nearly 30 years, I've been a pastor and disciple maker, and what I really love doing is helping guys be better followers of Christ and better leaders at home.
I'm Mark, a certified financial planner with an MBA and an Ivy League degree who wants to make sure you're making the smartest money decisions possible.
And this is Abraham's Wallet. Join us weekly and create a culture in your family of multi-generational prosperity, spiritually, relationally, physically, intellectually, and financially. Run your home, your dough, like a biblical boss.
We were in the same physical space like 24 hours ago.
That's true.
And now that's we're true. Across the country from each other.
And we were so lazy that we couldn't bring ourselves to put a freaking camera on and record an episode.
We lazy just had to one thing that we were not on that trip.
We just lazed the day away having like 5 appointments with clients and CPA firms and stuff.
Yeah, my first time really to spend any significant time in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was a wonderful place. I got there at midnight and flew out at 6 a.m. a day and a few hours later. So it was a very packed trip. But yeah, unfortunately, we're not coming to the people this week from the same room like we have recently when I was in Ohio. Quickly, before we jump into today's topic, did you know that today is, at least on LinkedIn, this is a very big deal. It is an international holiday that we've made up for today.
No, I didn't know March 8th had any significance of any kind.
It's International Women's Day today.
What is that, Mark?
So that, here at the Abraham's Wallet podcast, is a special day where we decided we're going to focus on the topic of patriarchy.
Smart.
In honor of International Women's Day. So that's about as close as we get to intentionally kicking the hornet's nest for likes and clicks. I'm here with you to talk about something that's very important to the flourishing of women internationally, which is the righteous patriarchy.
Yeah, that's right. Heady stuff, International Women's Day. So we exist in defiance of it, not because we don't believe in women or that they exist internationally. It's that I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's no International Men's Day.
I don't know.
Also, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, this is reminding me of a series that we're taking the youth through, the teens. I have a teen group that just met at my house last night, and we're talking through a series called God Made Them Male and Female. And one question that we have asked is, if God designed a man, for instance, to be a leader, what do you think is a lie that would exist in the culture regarding men as leaders? Well, one would be men can't be leaders. Another would be it would be dangerous if a man was a leader. And then, of course, number three is that a man should never be a leader. Similarly, we could look at how God's made a woman and we could ask the question, what would the culture say? How would the culture lie against God's design? And it would be a woman should only be a leader. A woman should never be a follower, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just going to go on a limb and say that's probably some of the ethos behind International Women's Day. Kiss my grits. That's what I have to say.
I won't kiss your grits, but I am excited to talk about our theme du jour.
Okay, let's start in. I venture a guess that what we're going to talk about today describes 90% of our audience. And if you're the other 10%, you're quite welcome here, because I'd like to try to persuade you to get into the 90%. But I think that as I described, a lot of our people are going to go, that's us, which is what I want. I want you to end up encouraged. So let me tell you a couple of quick stories. I want to profile a couple of families to you. I'm thinking of my friend and neighbor two doors down. His name is David, and he has a young family. And he grew up in a small town called New Richmond outside of Cincinnati. David's from that little town. He doesn't live in little town. He is raising his family in the big city. He is a big deal in the big city. He's kind of a local personality. He gets profiles in local magazines. He's an influencer. He knows the hoity-toity set. Those are his clients, the rich and powerful of the city. He knows all these people by name, the pro sports players. That's his kind of world. He grew up sort of pseudo-Catholic in the same way that a lot of Jewish people are raised, where there's the culture of Catholicism. Our family doesn't really bother with like the beliefs, but there's just some traditions that kind of define our family. He is not raising his family that way. He's raising his family as we're going to be followers of Jesus. We love the Bible. We're trying to put the pieces together to make a different expression of family than David was raised with. He married a girl who was raised without faith. They have a bunch of little kids, which they're convinced that's God's pleasure and will for them, which it is. And they're trying to figure out new norms. Cut to example number two. We have a mutual friend. He is a bit of a YouTube personality. If you traffic in those waters, you might know him. His name's Tim Schmoyer. He is doing something new with his family. He lives out in Kentucky. His family lives on, I believe, 5 acres. We've done the tours of his house before here on Abraham's Wallet. He raises chickens, a whole bunch of chickens, and they're meat chickens. So they have a big killing every year. They put them all in the freezer and then eat them as the year goes. They raise crops. They're doing like a mini kind of homesteading experiment. He's doing something even career-wise that is very unorthodox, and it's not what he was raised with. He has pastoral muscles in him. He has a ministry background. The kids are homeschooled. He has a business that he has built out of a home office, built a YouTube business. So he's got like a little YouTube studio at his house. And it's kind of like, what? It's very unorthodox. And it's not how he was raised. So he and his wife are putting together a new story. They're trying to, again, cobble together something they've never seen before. I think that's pretty normal among our people. One more example. We can cut this out if need be, but it comes to mind to me as a profile, the Mark Parrott family. So here, the Parrott family, this is a Texan and a Wisconsiner. Would Amelia call herself a Wisconsin?
I think it's a Wisconsinite.
Wisconsinite. They have moved their family, very interesting scenario. They moved their family to Salt Lake City. They created a magnet of, we could discuss how and why this magnet happened. But what has happened is that extended family has all moved toward them in Salt Lake City. There are traditions and rhythms that are a part of the Parrott household that have never been seen on either side of the family tree. There are values that some of them came from Mark's family, some of them came from Amelia's family, but there is a combination in this family and figuring out specifically rhythms and values that have never been seen before. And so they are, this sounds pejorative, I don't mean it to be, they're cobbling together, they're picking and choosing bits and pieces to put together something that's never existed before. So those are three little profiles of families. Here's where I'm going with this. It is the very, very, very rare family who can say, basically, we want to continue, refine, and expand on everything our parents have done. very rare. So many of the families that we talk to on a week-in, week-out basis are trying something completely new. They're venturing out. They're creating the kind of family they've really never seen before. They get glimpses here and there. I just did an interview with a guy named Joe Freudenberg, and he talked about this season of his life where every person that crossed his monitor that he thought, they get something I don't get, and I don't have this, it's not part of my story. He would just awkwardly reach out to them and say, could we have some time of some kind? Could I just kind of pick your brain about something? I think that kind of mindset is in so many of our people who are going like, I'm trying to put something together I've never really seen before. They might come across family teams with Jeremy Pryor, and that something gets turned on. They read Jeremy's book, Family Revision, and they kind of go, boy, there's something there I don't understand. They read Man of the House by C.R. Wiley, and they go, that sounds like a land that I would like to go to. I don't know exactly what the implications are, but I want to do something I've never seen before. They go, this smells like the kingdom of God to me, and I want it. And they try to cobble together with the knowledge and resources they've got, doing this delicate dance. I want to honor my parents and grandparents, and I also want to forge something new. Maybe it will meet with family approval. Maybe it won't, from prior generations. That's who I want to talk to today. It's all of those people. And I'm calling this group, ready for it. You've already seen it on the title, drum roll. I'm calling it the new patriarchs. You're the new patriarchs. I would love to read a book by that name, The New Patriarchs, describing this generation. You look back 30, 40 years, and it was, how can we be new tycoons? Who can be awesome out there in the market? And that seems like the question out there right now is, who can build a family? I didn't smell that 20 years ago, but that's definitely what's happening right now. And I think that there's desire for a new patriarch. I've got 5 earmarks, I think, that tell me that we're seeing that trend happening. Would you like to interject?
I'm excited to hear it. I mean, if it's not obvious to everybody, the patriarchy is a word that it elicits a lot of emotion in our culture. Either people go, yeah, I'm all for it, or more likely they go, I thought that was basically toxic masculinity and evilness. So I'm excited to talk about it. It's funny that you mentioned C.R. Wiley's book, Man of the House. I don't know how this happened, but we are Facebook friends, me and CR.
Love it.
And he posted just 2 hours ago. He said, patriarchy comes in lots of flavors. Christian patriarchy is not the same as Islamist patriarchy, or the classical Roman expression, or the Japanese version. And he says it's inevitable, since it has a metaphysical basis. Patriarchy is inevitable, but it can still find different expressions on how it's directed. So as much as I'm tempted to use the word patriarchy to just needle people and make a big reaction, the truth is there's a lot of things that happen under the banner of the word patriarchy that we would go, that's gross, and that's not at all what we're talking about. So I think it's very important as you move forward kind of to explain to us that if you're listening to this and there's any inkling in you that goes, I don't know if I feel comfortable with that word, this is our culture as Jesus followers. So I would just encourage you to kind of like open the mind and hear what Christian patriarchy looks like and how it's taking kind of this new expression that might be different than what you have in your brain when you just hear the word.
Yeah. Yeah. We could talk a long time about patriarchy and what we mean by that word. I'm not really interested in that today. I'm interested in the pioneer spirit that exists in so many families. And if you are a couple, you're a man and woman, you're a couple, you're a family, and you're trying to blaze a new trail, then you're a patriarch family. And what I mean by that is you are like your family's version of Abraham and Sarah, and you are going to a new land that you've never seen before, and you are trying to set up something new and you're trying to figure it out and you're walking by faith and it takes some courage and you're trying to reinvent something. I'm not talking about, you know, the word patriarchy, the definition of it is patria, father, and archy, like a hierarchy. Arch means over or rule. So patriarchy just means father rule. Now, we believe in that concept because the Bible teaches that concept. That's not exactly what I'm trying to talk about today. I just want to talk about this heartbeat of people that goes, we're trying to make something new. That describes me. That describes you, Mark. That describes so many of our friends who we are trying to figure it out. So as I reckon it, I mean, there might be more, but I can find 5 earmarks that say that is definitely happening right now. And one is probably the number one place that you see the kind of talk about patriarchy that you're talking about, which is, you know, clicky and let's get into a debate about what, you know, tough man world. And that is the manosphere. Just the talk of manosphere that didn't exist 10 years ago, but there's a lot of talk right now. Who's the Mormon guy that does the old man podcast? It's been around for a long time.
The Art of Manliness.
That's it. The Art of Manliness. You know, what is a man? Am I one? Do I have to pose as one? Do I have to lead? How much aftershave do I have to wear? Do I have to grow a mustache? Do I need to talk about powerlifting? Sorry, Mark, et cetera. There's this whole kind of, we're bros and we're proud of it. Deal with it. That kind of thing exists. I think it's one of the earmarks that we live in an age when people are trying to redesign what family means. It's one of the expressions that people are floundering, they're grabbing, they're searching, they're exploring. They're trying to turn over rocks to go, what will our future be? What will our family be? And one of the arenas where there's this kind of struggling, questioning expression is in the subject of what a man is. So you're going to get one version of what a man is in the Barbie movie. You're going to get another version of what a man is on, I've already forgotten the name of that podcast you just said.
The Art of Manliness.
Yeah.
Okay. So where you see people pressing into that manosphere world, you can know that you've got people that are trying to make sense of what the heck am I supposed to do as I strike out for new territory as either a man or a couple.
Correct. Another arena where we see this kind of struggling, floundering, trying to figure it out, and this has been a hot button in the last week or two, is, you could probably fill in this blank, the trad wife space. So this is a kind of a social media phenomenon, just like the manosphere is that I believe, I'm seeing this more than I ever have, there's a great disillusioning happening right now among the single, liberal-minded, I don't mean that politically, I mean that in the way that you view the world, the single, liberal-minded, career-ambitious woman. I just saw a video this past week. There's this young woman, and she is talking about having gone on a couple of dates with a traditional guy that she's met. And these are her words. She said, I feel like I am being possessed by a housewife and homemaker. She says, I have waved the banner of feminism because that's what you're supposed to do as a 20-something. But I found this guy and he's kind of like protecting me and taking care of me and making sure that I've got what I need and paying for dates and just being like a man. And she says, and I'm finding, she's saying this to a camera and just throwing this out to the world. I find that I want to make meals for this man. I want to make a home where he's comfortable and would rest. I want to pack his lunch. And then when he comes home, I want supper to be waiting for him. She's like, all of my strident feminist ideologies have gone out the window with me meeting this guy. And she's like, I'm just observing myself and it's very weird. And I think that's very representative of a generation that's doing the same thing and realizing, wait a second, if my strident, I will work in a cube, I will be in the IT department. They said a woman couldn't do it, but I will. And they go, it ends up, if the cartoon of where it ends up, and forgive me if this is offensive, it's just a cartoon. of where this ends up is the obese single lady with short hair who has three cats that she refers to as her children, and she has tattoos, and you never know what her sexual orientation is by the way she presents herself. That might not be where I want to end up as a 50-year-old living that life. So I think that disillusionment is there, and I think that people kind of play acting with the trad wife thing, and we are seeing like memes of the 50s housewife and gingham patterns and like old-fashioned dresses, and I can bake bread and I want to hang clothes on the line. I know that that is play acting. There's like cosplay there, but we're trying to turn over stones and go, is there something there for me? Because we're trying to reinvent family. Does that sound crazy?
I think that's true. And I think the last couple of weeks, this has been a hot button because Ali Beth Stuckey, who's super popular on Twitter and YouTube and has her own podcast that's very popular, made some comments about basically it being unnecessary to bake your own bread and be a homesteader to be a godly Christian woman. And then
right.
The whole kind of whatever you want to call them, far to the homesteader baking bread crowd jumped down her throat and said, why are you attacking this when there's so much evil? And the truth is she wasn't attacking that. Just like we're not saying, if you want to be a power lifter and do jujitsu,
of course,
and that makes you feel like, hey, I'm expressing my masculinity in a healthy way, we're all for it. What we're saying on both fronts is that the external trappings of trad wifing and making your own dresses and cooking sourdough or hyper masculine kind of, you know, whatever that looks like, those things really don't have a whole lot to do with godliness. And they certainly don't mean that you're on the right path when it comes to this thing we're talking about today, which is how do you become a patriarch trailblazing couple and family.
Yeah. I don't have any value judgment to make about any of that. You know, grow a mustache and lift weights. Great. No, I don't have a problem with that. I don't care. That I'm just saying that I'm just making a cultural observation that thing didn't exist 20 years ago. I'm just making an observation that there are these subculture movements that reveal to me that we as a people are struggling with. We want to reinvent roles and family somehow, and we're not sure where to look. Yeah. That's all. So earmark number three, that something is up, is an upheaval in religious habits. This has been culturally observed all over the place. And to just describe it in very broad terms, there was a walk away from traditional religious organizations in the 80s and 90s for good reason. Then there was an uptick in make it up as you go along, non-denominational, wear cargo shorts and Crocs, church expressions. And that happened a lot. I mean, that really started in the 60s and 70s, really in Jesus movement in California. And it kind of spread around like, do you have to wear nice clothes to church to worship God? Well, the answer is no, you don't have to do those things. But the backwash of that thing is now there's an uptick in more traditional or even liturgical expressions because everyone's asking, can we just make it all up as we go? Isn't there something eternal that we're supposed to tap into? Is fad Christianity the best we can do? And so there's this kind of, you know, I think of Rod Dreher as an example of a guy he's been around the block and he has just decided, I'm going to go the most orthodox way I know, and he has said this, I know orthodox Christianity will be the same 100 years from now as it is right now. I would rather throw myself onto something that's going to be consistent as opposed to who's the latest Saddleback or who's the latest, Gateway Church or whatever the hip thing is. And then let's just try to keep up with who's got the coolest thing. That's not going to last very long. And so the patterns of religious habits, I think, is another earmark. It's another data point that we are in a rebuilding phase right now because there's a lot of moving pieces. Number four, we just talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is there's a revolution in education. The face of our national education is permanently changing before our very eyes. We knew of and eventually met one of the pioneering families who in the 70s and 80s were doing homeschooling, and people were thought they were out of their cotton picking minds for them to go, I would like to give a go of teaching children, my children, in my own home about history and science and math and literature. There were people in city council meetings that felt threatened by their existence, went nuts over these people. And now, as I have said, there are huge conferences. There are huge networks of homeschooling, of co-ops, you name every kind of version of education that there can be. Again, I don't have any comment to make on whether that's good or bad. I just know that it means people are reinventing things in this generation that they were not a generation ago, and that I grew up going to a little Christian school for a few years. Then I went to public school from sixth grade until I graduated college. I was in public schools, state schools, and my—
On the cheerleading team.
On the cheerleading team. I mean, way in, down in the deep end of the public school system.
We'll have to talk about that some other time, but go ahead.
And my children have never darkened the doors of a public school, and they never will. It's not going to happen. We're just in a different place. There's a reinvention happening. Number five is just the kind of entrepreneur movement. There's a kind of cartoon of being your own boss. It's just that the allure of climbing the corporate ladder, being a company man, the company will tell me, honey, I've got to work this weekend. The boss told me I had to. Why, honey? Oh, we're at the end of the quarter and the sales goals have to be met. Oh, okay. Well, whatever we have to do. I mean, they put a roof over our heads. That allure is going away. It's losing its shine. And it's now being seen more as an empty ambition compared to the greatness of building a family that's intertwined with your business interests. So people are, I know I'm talking in very broad terms, it seems like people are taking back their working lives, and they largely want those under their own roofs again. Again, I will describe Tim Schmoyer and even yourself as examples of this, where I'm not going to go out and punch in out there. I want my work life to benefit and bless and accentuate our family rhythms. And I don't want to have to bend my family rhythms around that thing. So again, no comments on any of those, no value judgments. I just see those five things as huge shifting tectonic plates that tell me something significant is happening with the way that we see family. Thoughts?
My thought, Steve, is that as you describe all five of those, and I'm somebody who I think I'm going to agree with what you say, here's what the biblical sort of narrative is pointing us towards as our calling. All five of those, I'm like, yes, I feel that, and I feel the next thing, and I feel the pull in between, should I go get a job that pays me a reliable, safe income? Or should I be an entrepreneur that's like potentially super beneficial to the family, but also tons of risk? And is that even the smart thing? So like every single one of those areas, I feel sort of tug of war internally. And I'm somebody who is maybe, I think, going to be on the other side of what you say, you sort of the one of the solutions to all this tension is. So if I was just out there floating in the froth wondering, well, what am I supposed to do with myself as a man? Or if I'm married, young married, and I'm saying, what are we supposed to do if we want to lead a godly family? I would imagine that the pressure and maybe even uncertainty created by a lot of those forces you just described is huge. What are we supposed to do with all those pressures?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They're there and there's no getting away from them. And I'm not trying to affect any of those trends. I'm neither for nor against them. I might have some opinions about them, but I just know that it's in the zeitgeist, and I want our people equipped to deal with the problems in front of them. So I know that that's our people. And I would just like to say, we see you and we know that you're trying to put it together. And you know, is that you? Are you trying to forge a new path with traditions other than the ones you grew up with? And are you seeking a deeper connection to your children than the ones that you had with your parents, maybe? Are you looking for a true friend and a teammate in your spouse as opposed to just like a roommate lover who holds up their end of the deal? Are you seeking that your money would fuel your family's true meaning instead of pursuing money and hoping you find some meaning along the way? Are you scouting out new territory for your generation? Then I say, my label for you is, you are a new patriarch. That's what is happening with you. I spent time with a family just this week where they're trying to come up with a family vision statement, but they kind of felt like all thumbs because they didn't know. They were asking all of these questions, and like, we've got a couple of little kids. We're on a career path. Is it where we're going to end up? I don't know. We've done some ministry over the years. I don't know where we're going to be living. We have some thoughts about moving out into the country. Maybe we're supposed to stay here. And I think it was a great relief to them where I just told them, you're pioneers. They both come from unbelieving families. So we're trying to find discipleship. Somebody tell us, what are the rhythms of a godly family? What are the relationships look like in a godly family? How are we supposed to handle our money if we're seeking God? Definitely new questions that they have not gotten answers from their families of origin. I'm just sort of waving a flag going like, we get you. I'm cheerleading you. And we want to help those people who are trying to put that stuff together. I hope that we're a resource. So I know that we don't have a lot of time left. I simply have four little pieces of advice if you're in that space. And I'm excited about what you're doing. I know it's rough terrain. It's hard plowing. And it's very exciting to me how much bold pioneering I see from young families.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear the 4 points. You know, when you say pioneer, you're pioneers, that has a connotation where I'm from here in Utah. Everybody's great-great-grandfathers pushed their hand carts out.
The hand cart challenges.
They were following old Brigham Young out to the promised land. But in my mind, because I'm not from here, the thing I always think of is Little House on the Prairie. And you know, you're talking about a pioneering family, and then you mentioned my family, and you mentioned Tim's family and some of these other families. And one thing that I think people don't realize when they're facing these decision points early on is, when you're a pioneer, you make some decisions, you move forward, and then sometimes it doesn't rain for 18 months and you have to pack everything back into the covered wagon and leave the spot you went. So there's just, it's not like, well, Mark, you were in this place and then you figured it out. It's like there's just more of a mentality and a spirit behind, we're going to press into unknown places.
That's right.
As a family. I even tell my kids, like, some of what you see us doing, we pray that you would pick up and it would be a part of your culture and your family. But we are excited to know, what are the new things that you're going to be doing with your husband someday that we haven't ever thought of, and we're going to follow you into those things someday. Mm-hmm.
So, that's right.
Anyways, I just don't want it to sound like anybody, you, me, any of the families you mentioned. I know all of them have a long list of wins and a long list of, that was an absolute, we had to turn around and walk right back where we came from.
You are walking me right into my first piece of advice. I'm going to give you 5 pieces of advice, and here's the first one.
You added one. It was 4 a second ago.
Oh, was it? Oh, I do. You're right. I couldn't see it. It was on the next page of notes. It's 4.
Okay.
Number one, just embrace the pioneer spirit and try stuff, for goodness sake. And you're not going to know if something works if you don't try it. Thomas Edison said that, I didn't fail, I just learned all the ways it wouldn't work. And that's a great way to see even career decisions that you make. Our friends, the Pattersons, he's a lawyer here in town, and they did what they thought they should do when he got the lawyer gig and the income went up. They moved out to Mason, Ohio, and bought the big house on the I don't know, 3/4 acre or something. And they lived out there for 2 years, 3 years, started to have kids and thought, what are we doing out here? We went to like the new part of town where all the trees are small, because that seems like the smart thing to do. They're like, but this isn't where our people are. We shouldn't be here. And they learned, oh, we've got to move back where our people are. That's where the life is. And they learned through making that mistake. It's okay. And a pioneer has to try stuff. So you have to be bold with your time. We just did an episode recently on spring break and all the kind of non-traditional things you could do with your spring break. If you wanted to build adventurous, resilient kids, you could plan something for your spring break, which is a backpacking trip across a national park that you know is going to be difficult. Well, that's not a very traditional thing to do. Yeah, but if you're a pioneer, you got to try things like that. Justin Wolfenberg has decided to take a, wait for it, cross-country bike trip with his whole family, including all the kids, riding bikes across the country. Okay, that sounds super pioneering to me. So just do bold things with your time. Do bold things with your space. I think of the Wolfenbergs again. We did a tent tour with them. They moved into a house that needed to be completely renovated. So I think they lived in like 2 or 3 rooms while they started working on this house. And their oldest son, Henry, lived in a tent in the backyard for a year throughout Cincinnati winter. Had Justin ever seen that from his traditional family of origin? No, he had not. They were doing bold things. They were experimenting.
Yeah. One thing that when I was developing software at companies that I just preached and preached and preached is there was this old way of doing software development back in the 80s and 90s when that was kind of a new thing. And it was called waterfall. And they would spend all their time and collect all the requirements from the business stakeholders and things like that. And they have everything built. And then they go, okay, let's put our heads down and let's build this for the next, you know, year, 2 years, 3 years. We're going to, in some cases, invest millions of dollars in this thing, and then we'll release it and it will solve the problems. And that, whatever years down the line, is when you found out that what you built was useless. Wow. And instead, my mantra had become, we want to spend the minimum amount of time and money to prove that the ideas we have about what will work are wrong. So yeah. If you think about it that way, now this doesn't always apply, but often it's helpful to go, we think we're a family that just thrives on adventure. Our purpose is all about adventure and challenge. And you just talked about the Wolfenberg family. Well, understanding if that's true about you by taking a year off, quitting your job and putting everyone on bicycles, probably not the best first step into that territory.
True. Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
So I like what you said, which is just think of experiments. Just step forward and have a bias for action. We've talked about that before, but have a bias for doing things.
Yes.
And then feel freedom to say, yeah, we thought this was us and it's not. That's right. Part of the pioneering thing. And there's no shame in it. You're not supposed to have the next 50 years mapped out. You're just supposed to push forward.
That's right. You and I both like Sukkot. I tried that out with some friends. It's a Jewish festival. I'm not a Jew. I don't have to do these festivals. I saw it engaging a family in spiritual content. I tried it out with my family. Easy experiment, and found out this is a winner. And so we keep doing it. Those are the kind of things you should just default to. Well, let's try it. You should do bold things with your money. You know, have a year of saving dangerously. You know, this is kind of the Mr. Money Mustache idea. Just have a year of saving dangerously and go, let's just set ourselves up that we're not the 28-year-old couple that's, you know, wringing their hands. Are we going to be able to make ends meet this next year? We're not going to worry about that because we're going to save a lot and for 1 year, and it's going to be an experiment. And then what do? I don't know. Just do a bold thing. My parents would never have done that. We're not talking about your parents. We're talking about what you guys are trying to build. Another thing that comes to mind, because it's so top of mind right now, is that we have we have given the people at AWHQ, Abraham's Wallet Headquarters, we've given them the prototype of a study that I'm trying to finish right now, which is about financial transparency. The idea being, I would like to have a group of men that know me all the way. They know how much money I earn. They know how much money I invest. They know where my giving goes. And we're able to sharpen each other because we have, without judgment, made ourselves transparent to each other. That's a kind of a bold experiment that I guarantee boomers or Xers weren't doing 30 years ago. And probably your parents never did anything like that. But I just think of making bold experiments. And my advice would be to embrace a pioneer spirit, because if anything I've said up to this point resonates with you, by golly, I think you are a new patriarch. So that's number one. Number two, be absolutely committed to your marriage. Now, we look at the story of Abraham and Sarah. We think that they are such a reference for us that we named our podcast after Abraham. We think that he is the picture of what a wise, shrewd, and godly family leader is biblically. He wasn't a perfect guy. He wasn't morally perfect, but he was a trailblazer. He was a pioneer that did things that nobody's ever done before with the God that we follow. So I'm going to read a passage which will blow your mind. And I've heard that this very passage could get people fired from religious organizations because it's so explosive. It's incendiary. You ready for it? It is 1 Peter 3. And we're going to get a little bit of insight into Abraham and Sarah. And we're going to hear about the commitment that they have in their marriage to one another, okay? Likewise, you wives, be submissive to your husbands so that some, even if they don't obey the word, may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives when they see your reverent and chaste behavior. Let not yours be the outward adorning with braiding of hair and decoration of gold and wearing of fine clothing, but let your beauty come from the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable jewels of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. So it was the holy women of old who hoped in God used to adorn themselves. That is how they make themselves beautiful. They did this inward thing. And they were submissive to their husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, even calling him Lord. So she referred to him as if she were a slave on his property and referred to him as Lord. Ah, all the alarm. International Women's Day, you say, Mark? Is that right? And you are now her children if you do right and let nothing terrify you. Likewise, you husbands, live considerately with your wives, bestowing honor on the woman as the weaker sex, since you are joint heirs of the grace of life. What a great phrase to describe a marriage, joint heirs of the grace of life, in order, fellas, that your prayers might not be hindered. The insinuation being, if there is sin between you and the way that you treat your wife, there will be static on the line with you trying to deal with God, which is a very fearsome kind of idea. But this passage, this 1 Peter 3 passage, there is a reference to Abraham and Sarah, their relationship, and there is this deep commitment to one another that is scary even for us to listen to because it's so profound how much they were committed to one another. And I'm here to tell you that if you want to be a pioneer and you want to build a new version of family, outside of your commitment to God and His Word, we just said this very recently, your number one commitment must be to your spouse. Come hell or high water, my spouse is going to prosper. They're going to feel defended and supported by me, and we are going to be a team no matter what. That has to be your mindset if you intend to be a pioneer. I know guys who they know that they're reinventing what family looks like, and they rather leave their women in the dust. And they tell their women, you know, keep up, chick, because I'm making something that's going to be awesome and God's going to love it. And I'm here to tell you, God doesn't love that attitude. And you are creating decades of trouble for yourself by not making your first priority your wife, and then along with her as a joint heir, building this new version of family. Okay. Number three, I've only got four pieces of advice. The first one is that you just embrace the pioneer spirit, just experiment. Number two, be absolutely committed to your marriage. Number three might not seem obvious to you, but I'm just giving you a little wisdom. Strategically determine your rhythms, the rhythms of your household. Now, these are things that you can experiment at, but you're going to land on some things. You go, this works. So think about how a week should work in your home. Think about what your annual rhythms should be. This is one of the reasons we believe in this so fundamentally. It's one of the reasons that we furnish anybody that follows us with a goals summit guide. Is we want you to go away and with your wife, we want you to consider what a week and what a year would look like and what are our goals? What do we want to have accomplished in any given year? We walk through five capitals. I won't go into that right now, but you should be decided that you're going to build a year. And I know that there's experimentation in any given year, and there's can even be experimentation every week, but be strategic about the rhythms that you create. I mentioned Sukkot. So in our family, we have just decided that Passover is going to be a tent pole in the spring and Sukkot is going to be a tent pole in the fall. And we build things around that. And we experimented. Please hear me say again, we experimented with that for over years. And then we just decided this is so precious, we're not willing to let these go. And at this stage of the game, they have become fundamental, rock solid traditions that our children know is part of the culture of our family. And we have to strategize our year around those things. So they have become habit. Lodo Feb is one of those things that we experimented with a while. We tried it on. Oh, gosh, I think there's so much value in this, both for our finances and for our hearts. We want to keep doing this. And so I am just encouraging everybody, think through 1 week's time and then build some strategies about it. We did that even with something like, I wanted to experiment with reading the Bible every night at dinner. Have a Bible sitting on the dinner table. And when we have dinner, I'm going to read a Bible passage. Pretty simple idea. We experimented with a while. There's so much fruit in this. This is just going to become part of our rhythms. So number three, strategically determine the rhythms of your household.
Yeah. Jeremy Pryor talks all the time about one of the tenets of kind of families that are doing this is they pursue rhythms over goals. We are actually really big fans of goals. We think those are important too. But the cool thing about rhythms, like you said, is that you get to do them over and over, whether it's annually or in many cases weekly, like Sabbath. Well, we try to refine our Sabbath all the time and go, did that feel good or did it suck? Yes. And if it was not good, let's throw it out and try something different. So kind of blends with number one, but I agree.
Absolutely. The last thing for you new patriarchs is I really believe that when you land on something, anything, my story is I was kind of raised a Sunday Baptist, meaning like I was a Baptist and Sundays were church day. I wouldn't say that there was anything really more special about Sundays than that. And we experimented exactly with what Mark's talking about, the idea of keeping the Sabbath holy. Well, what does that mean exactly? And when to study? What does the Bible say about the Sabbath? And when we came to that realization after experimenting and realizing we want this to be part of our rhythms, then we go to number four, which is my number four thing is when you land on something, talk it up. Talk it up. Train your children in these things. Why are we doing this? Talk about it to your children. Find friends who are also experimenting. I can't tell you how much joy and comfort it gives me to be sharing notes with people as I go. Hey, we're trying this thing. This is absolutely how we came to Sukkot. Is talking with friends. Do you guys want to try that this year? I think of our friend Tate Paul. He was going like, I kind of want to try it. Okay, I want to try it too. Maybe we could have one night at your house, one night at my house. Okay. Well, we're comparing notes. Did you do something all day? Did your family stay out in the sukkah all night long? Did you do that all week? What did you do? Did you have a grilling out night? Just comparing notes and talking about it. I talk about it a lot with my wife. We're training our children in it. I'm talking with friends about it. And I would even say, start taking notes to record it for future generations. This is something that we believe in. Here's why we did this. Again, guys, you're the new Abraham and Sarah for your family. I said this to the family I'm referring to this week, where I said, the decisions you make, you are setting precedents that your great, great grandchildren, even if they have forgotten your names, they are going to be walking in the channels that you're creating right now. It really matters what your values are. They will be passed down to your children, whether you talk about them or not, actually, because who we are outweighs all of the content that you want to put together. It even outweighs, I could tell you that the way that you live probably outweighs the Bible in their minds. So if you want to underline the Bible and make it a value, well, it will be valuable to your children. But if you poo-poo the scriptures, even though there's a Bible in your house, well, your children won't think much of the Bible either, because your life outweighs it. So talk about these things with your spouse, your kids, your friends, and even consider, how do we pass these things down to the next generations? That's why we talk about, put your vision on your walls. You know, just come on, we gotta trumpet that this is who we've decided that we're going to be. This is why we believe in that family vision statement idea. We are pioneers. We know that. So let's make our tracks very clear to those who come behind us.
And I just want to reiterate it before we go, that part of that passing it on process is passing on the expectation to your kids that we are making changes here, and we are expecting you to continue.
Yeah.
And all of these things. So we expect you to continue experimenting. And, you know, there's rhythms that I'm like, man, I really hope that if we've done our jobs, the rhythm of Sabbath is something that passes on to my kids. But exactly how that looks and the specific, like, schedules for how they do that and things like that is all up for, let's make it work and benefit your family. And I think one thing you didn't talk about, Steve, is that when people say the word patriarch, I imagine that they envision some old dude kind of on his family throne and
right,
all
you're
the
right.
little ones and adults and even 50-year-old guys are walking up to him like, oh, you're the leader. But one of the things that's really important for this to work multi-generationally and not just be you started some new things in your little nuclear family is to prepare yourself and your future generations that it's not going to be when I'm 95 and can no longer walk to the bathroom. That's not when I'm going to start looking to you to take the torch and push and lead forward. I'm going to start doing that much, much earlier in life. And we've talked about that on this podcast before, but nobody cares when great grandpa hands over the business and says, it's time for you to inherit the family business. And everybody's at like 58 looking at him going, we've already built our own lives. I'm sorry. So
right.
Preparing your kids and yourself to follow the lead of future generations is a part of doing this well. And we are already always talking that way with our kids. Like, you're going to lead us before you know it. So let's do this as a family, and it helps us pull them in to this kind of pioneering new territory mentality, is the idea that I know it sounds like it's forever away when you're 30 and have some kids, but
yeah,
it's going to happen real soon. And here's how we want to fit into that and even expect you to start pushing forward into places we couldn't have imagined.
Just one last piece of encouragement before you go. I just know that it can feel like we don't know where we're going and we don't know where this ends up. We know we don't want to be, and we're trying to take the best of from the people that we run across. I know all of that uncertainty. I get it. And I just want to bless you with this little promise from Proverbs chapter 4. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to Him, and He will make your path straight. And I want you to know that if you're bold and you take experiments and you're trying to, God, we're trying to raise a family that's who you designed us to be in the way that you want us to go. I believe however wandering it may feel to you and however you feel like we're floundering and searching, I believe that when you look behind you, it's going to be so clear that the Lord led us all of this way, that he was telling a straight story through us, even though it feels like we're veering all around with regards to the future. Trust in the Lord. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your path straight. So keep after it, guys. We're rooting for you. We know that this is the job that we're all trying to do, and we're going to try to help you best we can on your way.
Hey, if you liked this content, be sure to like it and subscribe and share it with somebody. And remember, no matter how you're doing and leading your family, God's love for you is huge. And his grace is
greater.